Happy Sunday and welcome to another amazing edition of Sunday Conversations with the Rileys, establishing effective communication through spiritual growth. My name is Gerald Riley, and once again, unfortunately, my beautiful wife, my rib, my best friend, Katasha Riley, could not be with us today because she is at the Overflow Salon and Barbershop, holding it down for the Rileys, of course. Hey, listen. We are broadcasting from Columbus, Georgia, all the way to Eufaula, Alabama, and surrounding areas. And I am so very excited today because in the studios live, we have with us Mr.
Wardell Williams.
Wardell Williams. I like that name. It just slides off the tongue. Amen. Mm-hmm. And today's Sunday conversation is called Don't Drive Impaired. I'm going to say that again. Today's conversation, Sunday conversation, is called Do Not Drive Impaired. Now, Mr. Williams, let's go ahead and get into it. What is a DUI?
A DUI is a person who has engaged in drinking and has what I would call drunk to an excess to where their blood alcohol level is 0.08. 0.08 is considered driving under the influence in the state of Georgia.
Okay. Now, is there a difference between a DUI and a DWI?
There's no difference. There's two names for the same exact thing. DUI is driving under the influence, and that's in most of the southern states. But in most of the northern states, they don't call it DUI. They call it DWI. It's driving wild, intoxicated.
Okay.
Same thing. Either driving under the influence, driving wild, intoxicated. Same.
Okay. Now, what is driving impaired? Is that different than driving under the influence or driving while drunk?
Driving impaired is that by putting a substance in your system, you render your brain unable to function like it normally would. Everything is impaired. Your eyesight, your walking ability, you're staggering. Your memory, all of that is impaired. Your brain is impaired. In short terms, your brain is impaired.
Outstanding. Now, because I'm just an inquisitive kind of person, mm-hmm. I listen to a certain type of music, mm-hmm. and one of the guys that I listened to, he was on a riding lawnmower, mm-hmm. and he was intoxicated on a riding lawnmower. And when the police pulled up, they gave him a DWI. Now that fascinated me because I'm like, I thought that you can only get a DUI or DWI in a car or a truck or a motorcycle. But they actually gave him a ticket for being on a riding lawnmower intoxicated. So what is the limit as far as being driving a horse or a lawnmower? Can you get a DWI on these things?
You can get, it has to have anything with a motor.
Get out of here.
A bicycle with an engine, you can get a DUI on it.
So these e-bikes, the bikes that you mm-hmm. plug into the wall, if you're on one of these e-bikes and you just left the bar downtown, get out of here.
Scooter. I've had them in the office on scooters. Got DUIs on scooter.
Okay, so let's say someone has gotten a DUI on a scooter. Or is it the same process as far as the school as in a car?
Very same process.
Get out of here.
Very same process. You impaired driving.
So once they get cited for being impaired while driving, do they actually have to go to the school to keep their license, or can they just pay the fine and keep moving?
The Georgia state law says that if you get a ticket or a citation for driving under the influence, you must attend a 20-hour risk reduction program, and that's DUI school. 20-hour risk reduction program is DUI school. You must attend. Before you can be relicensed, you have to attend.
Do you have to pay for this school?
Yes.
Well, how much is what is the school called? DUI school?
DUI school? No, risk reduction.
Risk reduction school.
But it's DUI school.
Okay, now.
Go ahead.
What is the name of the organization that you work for?
I work for the DUI schools are regulated by the Department of Driving Services. DDS,
okay.
The Department of same person that regulate the driver's license bureau regulate us.
Okay. Now,
and that's in Atlanta.
Now, what's the name? Bi-City. What's the rest of it?
Bi-City DUI and Risk Reduction Program.
Now, what all do you do at the school?
We at the entire school, we treat people who have gotten DUIs. If you got a DUI, you can come to our 20-hour risk reduction program.
Uh-huh.
If you got a citation for marijuana impairment, we have a marijuana program. We teach DUI school for the ones who are driving under the influence of alcohol, but we teach what is called Prime for Life 420 for people who have gotten a DUI because of marijuana or other drug use.
Oh, hold on. Go back. Rewind.
Okay.
You can get a DUI for driving under the influence of marijuana?
Oh, yes. Marijuana, pain pills, anything, any mood altering substance. If
so,
you drinking, what do they make? What do they make over in the country? Moonshine. Get a DUI for that.
So what if I'm on prescription medicine?
If you're on prescription medicine, if you're on prescription medicine, and that medicine bottle has that yellow tag on saying that this medicine can cause drowsiness, do not operate while under influence of this medicine. You get a DUI if they catch you out there.
And you can possibly go to jail.
I got some people in prison now for that because they killed somebody while they was taking Percocet.
That's terrible. You know, today's Sunday conversation, you know, it's the holiday season, and there's going to be a lot of people celebrating and doing a lot of things around family and friends. And so today is a special show because we really want to educate the public on drinking and driving, smoking and driving, mm-hmm. being under the influence mm-hmm. of medicine while driving, being under influence of prescription medicine while driving.
That's right.
Because it's a very serious offense. And you can go to prison or jail for a very, very long time. And so today's Sunday conversation is entitled, Don't Drive Impaired.
Do not drive. My strong suggestion would, if you're going to drink, don't drive.
Okay, now walk me through the process. Okay. Someone has just received a DUI. Mm-hmm. So what do I need to do to get back on the street so I can start driving and get to work?
You need to come to the Bi-City Risk Reduction Program, the DUI school we just talked about. And then you have to pay a $210 reinstatement fee. You get a DUI, you're probably going to be on 12 months probation. You're going to be on 12 months probation. You're going to have to pay a probation fee every month for that. And then once you pay your reinstatement fee, if this is your only DUI, you can get relicensed.
So how much does the school cost? So give me the total. How much does the school cost?
The school costs $360.
The school is $360.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now what's $210?
$210 is the reinstatement fee to get your license reinstated. That's $210.
Okay, now is there another fee?
Yes.
What's the other fees?
Probation fees.
How much is that?
About $50 or $60 a month for 12 months.
So let's say that's $700. And what else?
And you're going to pay the fine for the DUI, which can be from $300 to $1,000.
So a DUI going to cost you roughly close to $2,000.
It's going to cost you more than that. A DUI in totality will cost you anywhere from $1,500 to $7,000, depending on how many you got before and all of that. It can cost you anywhere from $2,000 to $3,000 to $7,000.
So let's say I had one DUI,
mm-hmm.
and then a couple years later, it's my birthday, I'm celebrating, I'm turning up, and I get another DUI. Does that price increase or stay the same?
Way increase. Because if you get two DUIs in a 5-year period of time, now you got to do all that we just talked about. But then you have to have that interlock put in your car, the ignition interlock, where you can't crank up your car until you blow.
What is an interlock?
It's a breathalyzer that goes in your car. You have to put it in there. It costs $250 to put it in there.
Well, can somebody else blow in it?
No, they used to do that. They have pictures on them now. You do that to the picture right there.
Get out of here. You mean to tell me if a person get a second DUI, now they have to get something called an interlock in their
car? Have to get the interlock, ignition interlock
device. And when you blow into it, it takes your picture.
When you blow into it, it measures your blood alcohol level.
Right.
And guess what? If you're in the middle of it, if you're in the middle of going from here to Atlanta and you blow in it and your alcohol level is over the limit, it cuts your car off.
Shut the front door.
You know what?
It's just not worth it. Mm-mm. It
no,
is
it's
just not.
Not
worth it.
It's not.
So as a counselor, if I have a friend who I suspect might be drinking a little too much, what are some of the things that I need to do?
What I would suggest that you do is if you've tried to talk to him, if he's your friend and he might listen to you, you try to talk to him, but then get him to some professional who can let him know the road that he's headed down. I like to get him early like that and I'm going to show you everything in your life that you're going to impair with that alcohol. We see people who have lost, sometimes by the time a person gets to us, he's in the latter stages of alcoholism, he's already lost his wife, his kids, his house, his job, all that. I see truck drivers who have already lost their CDLs because they got a DUI.
Outstanding. Listen, just in case you're joining us today for Sunday Conversation with the Rileys, I'm in a studio with Mr.
Wardell Williams.
Of
Bi-City Risk Reduction DUI Program.
And today's Sunday Conversation is called Don't Drive Impaired. Now, I've been young once, and you still look young, Mr. Williams.
But I've been there.
You still look young. Mm-hmm. And I remember I used to hear if a person was impaired, to give them coffee or to give them some cold water, put them in the shower or something like that, and that would sober them up. And so let's talk about some of the myths.
That is a myth, by the
way. Okay, let's talk about
it. Let me start off by saying there's nothing can sober you up but T-I-M-E, time. Not cold water, not hot coffee, not internet.
So I can't eat a bunch of bread and soak up the alcohol
in my
stomach.
Can't put a pin on your tongue, can't do it.
So them old people done lied to me then. They said I can eat bread and it'll soak up the alcohol.
They lied. Tell your peppermint to run it away. It won't. Time.
A penny.
Time.
I can't put a penny on my tongue. And
if you drink, and for the people who are listening out there, if you drink, for every beer that you drink, mm-hmm. it takes an hour for your liver to get that beer out of your body. Other than that, it's going to sit there.
Okay, now I think it's some type of scale that you use as far as when you drink. A lot of it depends on your body size, your body type, how much you weigh, your tolerance, and stuff like that. But let's say an estimate. If you have one beer at the bar and you're a man of 200 pounds, would you be considered DUI if you get behind that wheel?
No, no. You wouldn't rise to the 0.08 blood alcohol level.
So how many beers is that?
But let me say this, though. And I hope everyone is listening to this. Let me say this. If you're in an accident where the other person dies and you live and you had one beer, that one beer is going to get you a vehicular homicide charge. Any alcohol or any marijuana in your system. You don't have to reach, if somebody dies, you don't have to be at 0.08. Just you operating the vehicle with stuff in your system. And a lot of people don't know that.
Mr. Will, please say that again.
If you are operating a vehicle with one beer in your system and you're involved in an accident where the other person dies, you're going to prison. You're on your way to prison.
And you're not DUI.
You're not DUI.
You're not impaired.
Nope. Let me explain it to you. When you go to court, they're going to bring all kinds of experts in there that show where your reaction time and all that is gone with one beer. You know how you react like that with mm-hmm. a beer, you?
I have cat-like reflexes, Mr.
Okay. Don't get caught.
Well, I'm not a drink anyway like that anyway, so. Okay, let's talk about this then. Let's do some in the military. Are you military, Mr.
Williams? I have been military.
Okay, so you know about preventive maintenance checks and services. So let's talk about some things that we can do to prevent this. So let's talk about some signs. So what are some of the signs we should look for in people who are maybe intoxicated?
Oh, okay, that's good. Red eyes, number one.
Now, hold on, Ms. Will. My daddy had red eyes. I had red eyes, too. Ain't nothing.
You don't have red
I'm
eyes.
Sober.
You don't have red eyes.
Okay, then.
Red eyes, slurred speech, unsteady gait. You ever seen that? Unsteady gait.
Yeah, I got a messed up but back all kind and of, foot, too, Mr. Will. My gait ain't steady.
There are all kinds of signs you can tell that somebody's using, though.
Okay.
They money short. They're not paying bills. They don't care about their hygiene. Mm-hmm. All of that. You can tell when a person is drinking or drugging. You can always tell it.
Okay. Now, if we suspect a person is maybe consuming too many pills or alcohol or something like that, should we automatically go and try to seek help, or should we actually confront that person and try to talk to him?
I'd try to talk to him first.
Or her.
Because
women drink out here, too.
They do.
Yeah.
We see them all.
Yeah.
But I would try to talk to them first. I really would. Yeah, or I would try to talk to them or somebody that know them, and maybe somebody can get to them. But if I couldn't get to them, I would sit down and talk. But if I couldn't, I would try to get them to see somebody.
Because
it's hard for a lay person to get somebody to go seek treatment. They need to be talking to a treatment person who can really.
Professional.
Mm-hmm, they do. They really do.
Okay.
They're not going to listen to you. They're going to say, well, who are you? Even if it's your buddy, he might not want to hear it from you. But he might. I mean, I would try it, though. I would.
I know as a military man, I know, you know, a lot of times, and we, when we talk about this all the time on the show, as an Afro-American man, I was raised to suppress my feelings.
Yep.
Suck it up.
Me too.
Keep moving. Don't cry. Don't tell none of the family secrets. Keep it all in house. And then a lot of times when we become adults, all that trauma that we didn't held in, alcohol and pills is a way to escape some of that trauma in our life.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just feel like a lot of times, you know, when people are indulging in substance abuse, you know, if you peel that onion back, it's some trauma up under there. So are you familiar with the kinds of trauma that causes people?
Let me say this. Many alcohol and drug treatment centers fail because the person comes, you're drinking 2/5 a day, and you come in. They send you to detox to get the alcohol out of your system. Then they talk to you about nothing but drinking.
Mm-hmm.
So then when you get out of treatment, all you've been talking about in there is drinking. So you go right back out and drink again. You said the right thing. To me, everybody that I have treated, any alcohol and drug person that I have treated, always had underneath stuff.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't get to the underneath stuff, you're not helping.
The layers.
Because if you leave, you see it going back out there. With
yes,
the
sir.
Thing. So you have to get you in this profession. You have to be a co-occurring disorder person. You treat people with both depression and abuse. We see women who have been molested. We see people who have been molested when they were children. They'll come to the office and say, "When I was 14 years old, this happened." Now they're 40 now. So mm-hmm. that means from 14 to 40.
Holding it.
And so they drink. And so they drink to try to get it going.
And I know about stuff like this because as a veteran, mm-hmm. I talk to my counselor.
Mm-hmm.
And I have some trauma in my mm-hmm. life, mm-hmm. but I have enough. Well, I ain't going to say that. I talk to a counselor because I know it's some stuff, trauma internally that I can't handle on my own.
Mm-hmm.
And thank God I had the kind of wife who's seen certain the signs
mm-hmm.
in me as far as PTSD. Mm-hmm. Were like, hey, baby, listen, I'm not saying you're this or that, but mm-hmm. I think you need to go talk to somebody
mm-hmm.
because some stuff you need to work out.
That's right.
Because of peeling back that onion.
If you don't get it out, you're probably going to gravitate towards substances mm-hmm. or you start contemplating taking your life. Mm-hmm. We see all of that. In counseling, you got to deal with we call it baggage.
Mm-hmm.
And all of us have some.
Yes, sir.
We all have some baggage. So if they don't get rid of the baggage, they're going to drink or drug or both.
Amen. Hey, listen, Sunday Conversation is entitled Don't Drive Impaired. And I'm in the studio with Mr.
Wardell Williams
of
Bi-City Risk Reduction DUI Program.
I love how your name sounds. It just rolls off your tongue. Like, that's a good, strong name. Now, Mr. Will, are there any changes on the horizon as far as DUIs, as far as counseling? Because, you know, we have a new administration, and so it's a lot of things in motion right now.
There's a lot. You mean as far as treatment? Or?
Yes, sir.
We have heard, we don't know, but we've heard that this administration is supposed to put a lot of funding into outpatient and inpatient substance abuse program, and it's needed because we don't have enough programs, enough quality programs, and we need them. I could give you some numbers. I mean, we probably see just about half of Columbus. We do, and unfortunately, we've seen people at our school who 3 weeks out of our school, 3 weeks out of our school, kill one or two kids. Hadn't even got time to get the license back yet, and still driving drunk. And so it's needed. It's pitiful to us, and we see that.
Now you just brought up a great point. There have been times where I have been driving and seen people swerving.
Mm-hmm.
Now in that instance, as a concerned citizen, what should I do? Should I call 911? Should I follow them? What should I do?
You should call 911. You should call 911 because the person you say might be somebody in your
family. And give them the tag number.
Give them the tag number. Call somebody and give them the tag number. But don't get up beside them because they may hit you.
Right.
You can stay back and get the tag number and call the police. Say, I'm on Winton Road and somebody's swerving. And they'll come.
Because I know my wife and I, we go out of town quite a bit. And I know sometimes, like, we go out of town late at night. And I see them big 18-wheelers. You can tell when them drivers get sleepy. Mm-hmm. They're not impaired.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, what about falling asleep behind the wheel? How does that play into?
If you fall asleep out in a, you mean in a car or truck?
A truck.
If you fall asleep behind the wheels and you don't hit anybody or kill anybody, then you just lucky. You're lucky. And they might get you for reckless driving or something if they see you. But if you fall asleep at the wheel, and we teach this in the driving training program, if you fall asleep behind the wheel and you run into somebody else and they die, that's manslaughter you're going to get.
What is manslaughter?
Where you really want intent to kill.
What's the difference between, is it manslaughter one or two or something like that?
Yeah.
Okay,
you got first degree and second degree.
Okay, what's the difference between those?
First degree manslaughter is, let's say you and I get into a, we get into a fight.
Well, you look tough. I probably can't whoop you, Mr. Will. I'm going to call the police.
But if we got into a fight and you died as a result of the injuries from the fight, that's manslaughter. Oh, okay, I'm sorry. That's manslaughter.
That's manslaughter one.
Yeah.
Okay, what's manslaughter two?
Now I got a weapon.
Okay.
Okay,
so I never knew that.
Yeah. We get to fight. I get a weapon.
Now, what happens when alcohol is involved? Does it change the sentence?
Not if both of you were drunk, the sentence not as bad. But let me tell you, they not going to excuse you for taking somebody's life.
They shouldn't.
I heard a judge one time say, I was out of here, and I heard a judge say, this guy was on crack cocaine, killed his parents because he wanted $40 to get some crack cocaine. And by the time he went to court 2 years later, they had his hair cut, nice suit on and all that. And he had a great lawyer who said, you know, he was psychologically gone. He was using crack cocaine. He couldn't benefit from knowing what he was doing because he was on crack cocaine and all that. And the prosecutor got up there and said, I agree he was on crack cocaine. And I agree he did not know what he was doing. But he chose to get on crack. So they, and he got life in prison for that.
Yeah.
So they're going to, if you do anything while you're under influence, they're going to get you because you chose to go that route.
Mr. Will, I once heard that the closest thing to taking a life is saving a life.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this show will save many lives from the information that we're putting out. And so I just want to tell you thank you for you and your lovely, beautiful wife for coming. She don't want to say nothing, but thank you.
That's all.
Thank you anyway. Now, Mr. Will, I find that, you know, certain people have certain jobs because it's personal with them. The type of job that you have is a personal job, personable job. You really deal with people's psyche, in a sense. So what made you decide to want to become this type counselor? Because you could have chose any type other counselor to be. So why this type counselor?
I tell people, I had a baby sister who got involved with a guy when she was 18 years old. This is a true story.
She'll
mind me telling you. When she was 18, she got involved with this guy, and he was using cocaine. And he got her to use cocaine, and she was never the same. Never the same. She ended up just everywhere. She's good now, though. She's really good. She really got over
but God.
She in church and all
but
that.
But God.
But and I couldn't, I was young then, and I couldn't realize how could we were raised in a family where you had to go to church, you had to sing in the choir, you had to go to Bible study and all that. And I wonder, how could this cocaine change her that way? And that got me, that's what started that up there. I said, I'm going to go see what I can do. Because people were telling me, because I was so feeling so bad that she was out like that. And they said, well, you can't change her. She got to want to change herself. She got to want to, and that's right to a point. She got to want to change.
What you mean to a point? Explain, please.
Because if you're doing something, if you're doing something wrong and I want to change you, but you're not ready to change, I ain't going to be able to change you.
Right.
I ain't going to be able to change you. I can talk to him, get blue in the face, but if you're not ready.
That's true.
And you need to know in counseling, change doesn't come from the outside in. No way. Change comes from the inside out. You have to change yourself. When people come to counseling, our job is to help them see what they already know. Believe it or not, a lot of people who are addicted to substances and all that, underneath that, good person.
Oh, 100%.
They're just trying to feel better. Good person.
Yeah. The gift comes without repentance.
Yeah.
Now, Mr. Will, you a counselor.
Yeah.
So, your wife not going to say nothing, so I'm going to ask you. Are you always in counseling mode?
Always. Oh, they tell me that, man. You don't be.
You can't get out of counseling mode.
I can get out of it, but when I see something, I say it.
We have to.
I love what I do. I love helping people.
It's changing lives.
That's right.
There's nothing more fulfilling. What other stuff? Well, it's a very fulfilling thing when you have an opportunity to help people. And I'm talking about genuinely help people and change their life. They will never forget that. That's why I think, and I don't mean to get off subject, but that's why I think teachers are so important, because everyone listening had that one teacher that told you something or did something that changed a portion of your life. And I never forget certain teachers that I had, Coach Smith and Ms. Martin. I never forget these people expanded my mind. And once your man expands, now you're exposed to different things and different people and different cultures and everything else like that. And so, in a way, as a counselor, you are a teacher of sorts. Because you're teaching people how to basically conquer something that's been conquering them.
What we try to show our clients at Bi-City, DUI and Risk Reduction Program, is that there's a better life out there, and we try to show them all the things that they can lose because of these substances. And we give them examples. You can lose your job. It kills me to see a truck driver who just got a DUI, just bought a house over in Alabama, got a whole family, and now his CDL's gone.
Well, Mr. Will, we at the end of the show.
Oh, okay.
And it's been going so smooth, I probably went over. So is there anything that you would like to cover that maybe we didn't get into?
I don't. I would just like to say, I want to end by saying, for all of you out there in radio land, if you are going to drink, don't drive. Don't ride with somebody else who, don't get a designated driver and allow him or her to drink too. Don't do that. Don't drink, don't drive, and you'll be good. I hope people stop drinking, period, because I don't.
Amen. That has been Sunday Conversation with the Rileys. My name is Gerald Riley. Peace out.
Opinions stated by various contributors to this broadcast, its website, and this radio program are not to be considered necessarily the belief of this radio station or Davis Broadcasting. Do you have questions or concerns or want to be a guest on Sunday Conversations? Send us an email at sundayconversations@dbicolumbus.com.